morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, March 28th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everyone. It is 48 degrees with light rain fog here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Radio Spectrum, Bell Labs, Deep State, DARPA, and Skynet. And yeah, we talked about all those things. We kind of dug into Bell Laboratories, some of the history, some of the inventions. And we discovered that they were way, way, way above and beyond technologically advanced. And even someone like me who kind of worked in the industry, like I said, I've done many years of communications and networking, and I had no clue that some of the things that Bell Labs had developed were already in development back in like the 1920s, and we are talking things like all kinds of voice synthesis, voice processing, antenna arrays, directed antenna arrays, wave division multiplexing, like all these crazy technologies that are still in use today. They're very common today. They're the way we do business today, but they were in the 1920s that they had already had some of these accomplishments. Now, a listener had left me a message about looking into some of the connections between Germany, the Third Reich, Nazis, and Bell Labs, and I started digging yesterday. Sorry, I didn't get to dig too much. I don't know. I need a nap. But I did dig a bit yesterday, and I saw that there were a lot of curious things. When you get back to, like, Roswell, New Mexico in the 1940s, and, of course, the war effort, it ends up, and I had almost guessed that there had to have been some sort of involvement. Looks like there is a dotted line, at least from what I've seen so far, with Operation Paperclip. So I'll dig some more on that. We're going to check that out and see what kind of dirt we can find. I even found Wernher von Braun mentioned in there somewhere with some of the stuff that they were doing for the military. So we'll see. But we also found out that the CIA, of course, and this was stuff that we were covering all last week, has been working with mind control experiments. And I ran across a commission back in the 70s. That was headed by Nelson Rockefeller, son of John D. Rockefeller, that just passed away, called the Rockefeller Commission, informally. I don't know, it had some other name, like President's Commission on something officially, but they tend to call it the Rockefeller Commission in like Wikipedia and that online. You're going to discover that they made the CIA very unhappy by turning over stones that the CIA did not one overturn, and that would be the LSD experiments, some of the experimentation that they'd been doing on people without their knowledge. I was reading about, I don't remember when this was, hold on, I might still have it open here. I was reading about ELF pulses and stuff last night, so I missed my tab. I don't know. But apparently the story goes, and I don't know, this sounds like a pot of hooey, like they try to sell us all the time, but the story goes that the Russians were suspected of beaming microwaves, because they had detected microwaves at our embassy in Russia, and this might have been back around the time when they started doing these experiments, because they were using that as justification for all of their future experimentation that they did. So, you know, when they thought that they had detected microwaves at the American Embassy in Russia, they said, well, well, we need to do experiments now to try to discover what kind of biological effects this could potentially have on us. And that set in motion many years of all kinds of crazy testing. You know, of course, they're like, oh, no, it doesn't cause any damage. Oh, no. But then there were discoveries that, yeah, well, there are certain frequencies. Since we are analog creatures and our body works on electrical impulses, we are a part of Earth. And I think it was the 10 to 30 hertz range I was reading. It's actually where plasma discharge and stuff like that happens for like lightning, like cloud to ground stuff. Well, our bodies and our electrical systems are in the very same ranges. The brain, we were talking about the brainwave ranges, go anywhere from really near to zero, and that would be when you're in the low powered down state, up to around 30 or 40 hertz. I don't remember what that really super high heightened awareness one was, but that was a pretty high in the spectrum, but it still, it was just above whatever the top level is. So we're talking maybe 40, 50 hertz max is what we operate at. And as they were messing around with some of these different spectrum frequencies, I could tell you they'd been toying with all kinds of scary things. So we had established that, yeah, there was a microwave network. There was one that was supposed to be, quote unquote, the Fed's network in the case of like a nuclear attack, so we could communicate. It also was being utilized to communicate with deep sea submarines. That would be the VLF range, which is right about in that range where the human brain is, right below that. And I don't know, I'm a little confused because VLF, ELF, very low frequency and extremely low frequency, look like they're right about the same, maybe a few hertz difference, but they typically will refer to them together. I know when I was searching yesterday, I was finding them referred to. So they're the same lower end of the spectrum range. But ELF, I was finding a lot of reference to in regards to people claiming that they are targeted individuals and that potentially it could be utilized to do things such as beam voices into their heads or make them feel sensations. And I gotta tell you, so I was reading a lot of these targeted individual accounts and I found a couple very, very interesting stories. And if you have not heard it, that woman who was the particle physicist at CERN, who then changed, I don't remember what she said, she changed her major and she was doing it in human systems, is what she decided to get her PhD in. But she was studying all these business models and how economies worked and whatever. And she pissed some people off, she was pretty sure. And they started targeting her. You need to catch that episode. Part one of three was run this Saturday. Tim Kelly, Our Interesting Times, was the last one uploaded for him this weekend. Her name was Dr. Katherine Horton. And she talks about targeted individuals and the psychopathy behind it. And man, I got to tell you, when I was listening to that, that episode gave me chills. This poor woman has been haunted for years. And I mean, somebody like that, somebody with a PhD, former CERN employee, studied particle physics, is telling you about the technologies and how this stuff works and how it's possible and how they psychologically torture you. And first, it starts with following you around and getting you all paranoid. And then starts some of these psychotronic. And that's what I discovered is a popular name for it, psychotronic weaponry. But a lot of this research came out of the deep annals of history, where they were doing human experimentation, where they were doing scary things. Of course, it was all in the name of protecting us, in the name of warfare, because the Russians might have had it. I have to say that as I was reading more and more about these stories of people saying they were targeted, and then I was reading studies that they had been doing with frequencies in the name of protecting us from the Russians, I was very surprised that some of the things people are feeling are exactly some of the same sensations in that they had discovered in their research. So, Yesterday we talked about then this DARPA grand challenge with the Spectrum collaboration, where they want to be able to take the entire radio spectrum now that includes VLF, ELF, microwaves, UHF, VHF, millimeter wave, 5G. They want to put some sort of deep learning, intelligent, artificial intelligent machine behind it to be able to dynamically allocate bandwidth spectrum on the fly. That's why we put Skynet in the title yesterday, because you have to realize, if you really start looking through some of the technologies, and we're going to read about some of these old microwave towers from AT&T and the long relationship between the AT&T and the NSA, and AT&T being the parent company of Bell Labs at that time. But remember, even though Bell Labs was doing stuff on, speech synthesis and, audio recordings, because it came from the very beginnings of Alexander Graham Bell. That's why the NSA found it so damn interesting. We were recording and broadcasting audio. Oh, what an amazing, amazing tool that would be for the alphabet agencies to have their hands on. So the scary thing is, as we are looking now at DARPA, because Bell Labs was sold to Nokia. I was right, Nokia Alcatel, which I guess they had merged as well. Looks like the Alcatel was always in France, but it looks like they might have all headquartered there now. So Bell Labs is over there, and it's almost like DARPA has taken on this next generation of innovation. Now, ARPA was around in the days of Bell Labs, and it looks like they might have known each other. They might have even, in the DOD and in the name of the war effort, they might have even had some collaboration. And who knows? Deep, deep, deep dark history. I have a friend. One of these days, we're going to have to get together. I haven't seen him in a while. And have some conversations about Bell Labs. Because I know he knows a lot more than I do. But regardless, you know, when you take a look at the electromagnetic spectrum, you take a look at the radio frequencies, and you take a look what a lot of it is used for. A lot of it is used for things other than commercial endeavors. Now, something interesting I ran across last night. So we got this spectrum collaboration challenge from DARPA going on, to be able to automate dynamic allocation across the radio spectrum. With the advent of 5G coming, I just saw a story last night that the FCC just finished an auction. And I guess they had some television networks that were within a spectrum. Actually, let's zoom in on this because I want to look. When I was reading the story, I did not have the radio spectrum picture in front of me, but I wanted to see. They were auctioning off a section of the spectrum that some radio networks had been broadcasting in, but they're doing it for 5G. And they told those television networks, there were television networks, that they had to move. And they have until next year, I believe. 5G is coming. They had to open up some frequencies for 5G. And I'm looking, I think it was 84 or 86. Megahertz was the bandwidth that was auctioned. I almost fell over. I guess they said it's in the VHF bands, and it is channels 2, 4, and 6, something like that. So maybe they're talking like the old school televisions when we used to have broadcast TV through the air, which I guess you could still get it with some sort of special antenna thing, but You remember back in the days, we all had the antenna tick-tick-tick-tick-tick-tick-tick on the roof. So I think it was 84 or 86 megahertz. But get this, they just announced, it just closed, they just auctioned it. They haven't announced who won it yet. This is going to be for this 5G new ubiquitous internet, Skybender drone type stuff across the world to give the Africans access to the machine. And they sold it for $10 billion. And that $10 billion for one, and I think they said it was just a 10 megahertz slice of the pie. Now, even more interesting, and I don't have either of these stories up because I was looking at these last night as I was, my eyes were closing, and I was just deciding it was probably about time for me to crash out. But there was another story that it talked about this big now international conference they were having. Everyone was invited to talk about spectrum allocation and cooperation because, that radio spectrum is getting so crowded up there, and it is. It really is. But guess where the conference is being held? In Africa! Yes, we have 4 or 5 new million people coming online. Let's learn to exploit Africa. And here's the thing. I've said this so many times. It's honestly, African people, if you're out in the outback in Kenya, you do not need a cell phone. I know they're going to tell you, and I mean, I can see some of the benefits, like Dr. Smartphone out in the jungle or the Sahara. That might be smart, but you're not going to be taking pictures of like a lion wound and then sending them to Google's DeepBrain to say, what do I do? I got a lion bite on my leg. And he's chewing on it. I don't know, guys. It's just kind of frightening to me. Africa. It's one of those last bastions where there's spotty internet, if any. I don't even know. There's got to be some. They're probably doing like broadband satellite. Real super slow. But they want to make this ubiquitous down there. And how interesting is it that they could get $10 billion for a 10 megahertz slice of the spectrum pie? So I wanted to tell you that to illustrate how large potatoes we're talking about here, right? We're talking about the global radio spectrum, where all communications and weapon control systems and radars and satellite communications, cell phone communications, broadband and mobile satellites, radio astronomy, outer space stuff. And then, of course, your millimeter wave, which is some of that. If they're using millimeter wave in the airport or in the post office, they're being able to see through your clothes or into your box. They were having issues with millimeter wave and distance and being able to shoot it through the atmosphere. But, they're doing all kinds of crazy stuff with multiplexing. And I saw DARPA was working on something about beam bending to be able to get around the refraction that happens as they're trying to beam from satellite down through the atmosphere. The water particles tend to bend the beam, and so they have difficulty trying to target or whatever. But they got this thing with little mirrors and stuff, and they can bend this beam and direct it perfectly. Guys, it's frightening. It's frightening what they can do. Of course, it's all being done in the name of communications. But remember, in these different wavelengths of this radio spectrum, like I said, there are all kinds of other things they could do. Like I said, in millimeter wave, they could see through things. In ELF, VLF range, well, that's the same range as the human brain works on. And they've shown that when they pump out frequencies, that they could potentially affect biology. They could potentially affect the environment. They could potentially affect the atmosphere. Now, we had talked, I What about some of those harp antennas? I don't know if we're going to make it to the story today, but I do have this document queued up that I'd like to read about what they say they are doing there. And this is a document from some of the scientists that are down there. But these antennas are tunable, just like a radio. Going through the spectrum, and you just kind of tune in, and you have access to different capabilities. Of course, you have to have all the hardware behind it. But when you have bazillions of dollars funneling in from the Department of Defense, all in the name of national security, I'm sure anything is possible, okay? So I'm starting to get lost again. Let's back it up. So we have these Gwen towers we discovered back from the Cold War. We have Bell Laboratories. Discover Bell Labs came up with all kinds of crazy inventions way earlier than we ever possibly imagined. Electrical sound recording, 1925. That was the Alexander Graham Bell first invention. 1926. Antenna arrays. 1927. Television transmission. 1927. Negative feedback amplification. Huh, that's an interesting one. I'll have to bookmark that. I want to look into negative feedback amplification because I just heard something about negative feedback in that from that CERN woman that Tim Kelly interviewed. 1927, quartz electronic clock. 1927, transatlantic telephone service. 1927, wearable electronic hearing aid. 1927, wave nature of the electron. See, that allowed them to do things like wave division multiplexing, I could guarantee you. And now that they understand the nature of the electron, they can bend it. They can bend the waves, make it do different things. I've seen them do like the rounded waves, then they do these square wave things. Nineteen27, telephone trunking traffic analysis. We talked about that yesterday. That is being able to pull reports. 1929, broadband coaxial cable. That's the coax, like for your cable system. 1929, ship-to-shore radio system. I was reading about that. That was for the Navy and submarines using things such as VLF technology. 1929, frequency interleaving of television signals. And that's a multiplexing that to be able to do many signals over one beam or one pipe. It allows you to make it extremely expansive versus using the pipe just for one thing at one time. They do, and I don't know, back then there was probably wave division multiplexing. Now they do some sort of time division multiplexing, where they're in slices of microseconds and they just all like interleave together. Let's see what else. 1931, of course, radio astronomy. Another one. I mean, this place was so above and beyond technologically that really makes you go, whoa. Who knew? Like, I honestly, when I started seeing the years that they were working on this stuff, I was really taken aback because these were things that I really thought was like the 50s, the 60s, not the 20s and the 30s. So, as they start getting into stereophonic recordings and voice synthesis and high efficiency transmission amplifiers, special directed antennas, repeater coils. course, you know, they were broadcasting TV. They did satellites. They did point-to-point microwave. That was that wireline network that we had talked about. And we're going to talk about that next year, where they would beam from one microwave antenna to another and they could bounce a signal. And there were no wires anymore for sending transmission. That network was a lot more expansive than the Gwen's network, which was the federal network. And this was all AT&T's network, all in the name of communications. But then we find out that AT&T and the feds have a really super, super, super long history, including being run by them at one point in the deep, dark past. And we find out that, yeah, there may have been some things going on there with the Cold War and secret military stuff and Bell Labs and potentially the war effort and keeping us safe, but shh, don't tell anyone. And it was all a monopoly anyway, so don't break us up. We promise we'll be good. Just tell us what you need us to do. Tell us who we need to spy on. And everything will be happy. You know, they even worked on the Pierce electron gun. I was like, the Pierce electron gun, what's that? Like, pew pew, electrons. No, for tubes. For tubes and televisions and analog devices, sound amplifiers, cathode rays. It's pretty unbelievable. 1947 was the TDX microwave radio system. They've done that too. Cellular wireless concept, 1947. It's just un-freaking believable. 1940s microwave propagation studies. And then, you know, don't worry about it. 1945, the Nike anti-aircraft missile project. You know, we'll just pull some of the guys off the radio stuff. We'll send them over there. But see, what you don't realize is that Bell Labs also worked on a lot of the navigation systems for the military. Navigation, tracking, control, and communication between these navigation systems and the devices. Now, what's interesting about that is that we are looking right now at collaborations that keep striking me as very similar currently that we had back then. Remember, history repeats. You want to learn about history to kind of figure out what's going on today. We have this new drone network, Amazon and Walmart wants to fly them. All these commercial drone licenses, they're ready to start inking. They got to come up with an air traffic control system. And we have all the big tech boys that want to be involved, including the cell providers. And I'm pretty sure AT&T might have been on that list, but I know Verizon was. And Google, Amazon, probably Elon Musk. I don't know. Elon Musk is starting to scare me again. We'll talk about him a little bit later. They're all still in cahoots. Of course, they're going to use, you know, consumeristic pursuits. Oh, it'll be good. You can get your Amazon purchase of items that you don't need, though maybe you do. I get a lot of my vitamins and stuff from there. But you can't wait 2 days. Oh no, you need it in 30 minutes or less. Let us dispatch the drones. You know, it's frightening. But here they are, and as they're building this air traffic control system, they're also talking about, you know, how they're gonna be able to track all this stuff. Well, it's got to be 5G. It's got to be millimeter wave. It's got to be this. It's got to be that. We got to build a new grid in the sky. And remember, this new grid in the sky isn't just a tracking grid for things such as, oh, I don't know, real-time ships in the ocean to see which ships are in which ports, because they're talking about doing that as well, making real-time shipping information available. Everything on the planet's going to become a node on the Internet of Things to be able to be bag tagged and tracked and viewed on your smartphone. But they're going to do that with things such as those CubeSats, those little tiny little 10 by, I think they were 10 by 10 by 10 or 1 by 1 by 1 centimeter, 10 by 10 by 10, I think. 1 by 1 by 1 would be really tiny. And they were launching millions of them in the sky. But they can all connect, they can all communicate, and they can do real-time information down below. Once they get all this 5G spectrum and everything ready to rock and roll and these towers up everywhere, it's going to be game on for this. And that is definitely coming. There are a lot of manufacturers that are working very hard on that. And like I said, just yesterday I saw two brand new stories that talked about 5G and this spectrum and how crowded it's getting and how, you know, we're going to have to move some people now so we can make room for the new technology. All in the background, so we got DARPA calling for a new cyber challenge where we're going to turn the big pulsating brain, boom, 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 on, and give them the back end to every bit of our communications technology, including technologies that run our navigation systems and our weapon systems and our radar systems and all of our communications network, and, oh, includes the spectrum that the human brain happens to work on. It's not a good place, people. Why would we hand that over to the machine? Like, it just seems so dangerous to me, you know? And then we look at things like DARPA's research, brain implants, and some of the stuff that they've already announced that they've been able to do, suck thoughts out of your head, put thoughts into your head, remove and replace memories, read your dreams, you know, zap your head, voice of God weapon, sonic projector. We're going to give that to an artificial intelligence, something that'll have access to those tools, those frequencies, with an artificial intelligence that I just saw. This freaked me out. I've been watching this series that started last year. I don't know. I didn't think I was going to like it because I get really mad about this stuff. But it's called Humans. I think it's on AMC. And it's all about, I got to tell you, it's kind of saucy. Definitely not for children. But it's interesting because they call them synths. It takes place in London. And they released, it happens in a not too distant future when we have Android helper robots that look and act a lot like humans. And they're deploying them into the home to help with house care. Or if you were injured, the one guy gets one from the insurance company. Actually, the one woman does too. He's doing physical therapy with her. And of course, the woman gets the beefcake. The guy gets the hot chick. And they're extremely realistic. And the show starts dealing with what happens and what starts happening in society where people start losing connection between each other because they start anthropomorphizing these machines. And then the machines start learning. And actually, there were two different types of machines. There are the machines that have consciousness, which were a secret, and the machines that don't. And the machines that have consciousness are the ones that learn from experience as if they are growing up. And they can also have feelings and emotions. And what's frightening is that I just saw a story probably a week or so ago. We didn't get there yet because we've been dealing with frequencies. But I saw a story where they just announced that, yeah, they have started now on this machine development where the machine's going to get smarter as it learns in development phases, just like a human does. Guys, this show, that show Humans, has really been making me happy that apparently there's somebody else out there who has some concerns like I do. I mean, really, they're not showing it as being a utopia. There definitely is a division. They are fighting because a lot of the jobs are all gone, just like we said, because robots took them all. And humans are feeling like they're being replaced and that they're becoming obsolete, just like we talked about. And that these synths are even taking their place now emotionally with friends and family, where there used to be closeness. They're breaking up families. And as they move into the future, the future for the human race did not look good. Well, technology can be your friend, or technology can be your undoing. And I think we are putting too much technology in charge without the proper safeguards. And all you got to do is follow that timeline forward. And that's what Kurzweil does. You know, when Kurzweil gives you these predictions, 2030, 2029, whatever he says, it's going to be the singularity. Well, Kurzweil does predictions because he does kind of what I do. You can look down the timeline, and based upon the parameters, based upon the existing circumstances that we have right now, we have 20 potential outcomes. And as we get closer and closer and closer to that potential outcome, it becomes more and more apparent as to what the end result potentially will be. And we're already close enough for me to see that things aren't headed in a good direction. We should not have DARPA giving the entire electromagnetic radio spectrum to an artificial intelligence that we are teaching deep learning, and the machines eventually will become smarter than us. But by the time they become smarter than us, they'll be controlling a good part of our infrastructure. And are we going to be able to turn it off? This is out of Fortune magazine, August 18th, 2015. AT&T and the government have been friends, in quotation marks, for a really long time, if you didn't guess it. The nation's largest technology and communication firms have collectively lost billions in sales after, documents leaked by Snowden showed that, willingly or under duress, many of them have been sharing customer information with government spying entities like the NSA. Now, guys, I told you this a long time ago. This is not new. And they had that meeting at the White House with Obama saying, look, dude, you want us to keep doing this? You better tell the American people that we have nothing to do with it. And you are holding our feet to the fire, and you're telling us that we have to, because our shareholders are getting concerned that our stock price is falling. Let's play good cop, bad cop. You be the bad cop. We're going to be the good cop. And then you tell us that you got to have a subpoena to get that information. And we'll pretend like we're struggling. But in the end, you know, we've been doing this for a very long time. We've been friends. And it's exactly what they're doing. You know, AT&T, I talked about 2004, I believe. There was a big lawsuit. I was still an engineer back then. I remember it because it was a big deal. And it was all kinds of privacy advocates saying, they gave up. AT&T gave up data so easily to the feds when they asked for it. But, I mean, they've been friends for a long, long, long time. According to a report this weekend, and this was in 2015, one firm, AT&T, ding, ding, has been more eager than others to help the U.S. government fight terrorism. The report describes AT&T's relationship with the NSA as, quote, unique and especially productive, showing that the NSA's partnership with the telecom giant cost the government more than twice as much as the next largest program, that the company was the first major telecom firm by more than 3 months to begin to turn over emails and phone calls after G.W. Bush had his wireless, warrantless wiretapping program that began, right after September 11th and October of 2001, which happens to be the same month that Bill Gates settled the antitrust lawsuit with the feds. And I'm certain he handed them also the backdoor keys. That's a very interesting correlation there. I did not realize that AT&T did the same. 2001 October. Now remember, AT&T is the parent company, at least then, of Bell Laboratories. So while it is clear whether the behavior described by the leaked documents is ongoing at the company today, you better bet your bottom dollar they're all doing it. Now, of course, they're all saying, well, you know, The feds gave us a FISA. FISA, whatever they call it. And they want surveillance data. There's nothing we can do. It was the law. Don't blame us. Blame them. As well, it's unclear whether the behavior described by the leaked documents is ongoing at the company today. It should come as no surprise that AT&T, compared with other technology and telecommunication firms, was working most closely with the government. The company, which was launched in 1885 by Alexander Graham Bell and protected from competition by the first U.S. patent issued for the telephone. I didn't realize that, but I did know that somewhere in my deep recesses of my mind, is the first patent was the telephone. They have had a symbiotic relationship with the U.S. government for much of its history. Here's a look at some of the major events in the history of AT&T's collaboration with the federal government. There was something called the Kingsbury Commitment. The American Telephone and Telegraph Company, AT&T now for short, rose to prominence during the waning years of the Gilded Age as Americans were growing weary of the predatory power of monopolies, and as the United States was engaging in a decades-long debate over whether it should follow in the examples of countries like Great Britain and nationalize private telegraph lines. As the nation's leading telephone and telegraph company, AT&T was fiercely opposed to such an idea, though it continued to lead the push for consolidation in the industry, reflecting the fact that it was more efficient in the long run for only one firm to provide the bulk of telecommunication services, right? And it's way easier when just one guy owns it all to be able to spy on you and share information and be able to raise the prices and do whatever you want. That's why monopolies are frowned upon, unless, of course, the federal government wants in. In 1913, and guys, this is where it gets really interesting, because these are the days of the robber barons and Edward Bernays and all this other stuff. AT&T and the federal government struck an agreement in which the feds agreed not to break up AT&T. Now, like I said, really interesting that there are parallels to this whole Microsoft antitrust lawsuit as well, where they were going to break them up. They didn't want a monopoly, and they came to, quote-unquote, an agreement, and they never broke them up. So in 1913, the AT&T and the feds struck an agreement, which they agreed not to break up AT&T, and it had also done that with Standard Oil. Ding, 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 ding. Standard Oil, which then became Exxon, which is what made the Rockefeller fortune, as well as American Tobacco. They did that with also in exchange for a promise on the part of AT&T not to buy any rivals with which they are competing. The agreement has been roundly criticized as an example of regulatory capture because it ratified AT&T's strategy of consolidation and collusion with rivals. But after World War I, the most explicit example of AT&T's collusion with the U.S. government came in 1918 when the government nationalized the telegraph and telephone system under the supervision of the United States Postal Service. And I was like, what does the post office have to do with telecommunications? But, you know, my friend pointed out to me back in those days, the post office was where they did telegraph. You would go pick up your messages at the post office when they would send your telegraph messages there, and they would ride on their horse to deliver them. But yeah, they were taken over by the post office in 1918. The USPS, United States Postal Service, ran AT&T and its competitors with a light touch, allowing executives like CEO Theodore Vail to remain with the company and they compensated shareholders handsomely. So, of course, shut up. Nobody complain. We will pay you all off to stay quiet. And it was during the war effort, and there was lots of money pouring in as investments. And as Michael Jansen and Christopher Yu write of the government stewardship of AT&T's assets, the government effectively guaranteed AT&T's previous rate of return while they assumed all of the risks of the operating system. This sure sounds to me like very much how DARPA works now. They got the checkbook. They find all the smarty pants. They start giving them things to work on and inking checks. And they take all the risk. These guys are just like money falling from the sky. Smarty pants trying to come up with new discoveries. This really is kind of how this military industrial complex takes control of our institutions and our children and our engineers to use all the good things and turn it into the war machine. Of course, the post office didn't have anything to do with that, but see, if you start looking at some of the discoveries, this is where they started developing a lot of these technologies that then would be used in World War II. The post office's stewardship did more to consolidate the telecom industry in 1 year than AT&T was able to do in five. And Jansen and you point out that the government was keen to make the nation's telephone and telegraph network more efficient, which meant reducing redundancies and harmonizing all the differences between the different networks. During the short time the government ran AT&T, it approved dozens of consolidations, and Congress formally exempted telecom companies from antitrust laws in 1921. Did you know about that? Because I didn't. But then World War II came around, and the government takeover had helped AT&T reestablished itself as a monopoly provider of telephone service. It was during World War II that the company then repaid the American people for its largesse. In 1940, the research department at Bell Labs, and that was when they started doing stuff with microwave propagation, stopped doing research as nearly all of the lab's work, about 75% of it, was then developed and redirected toward electronic devices for wartime. Ding, ling, 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 ling. First to help the Allies in Europe, and soon after to assist the U.S. Army and the U.S. Navy. So there you have it. The 1940s, during World War II, 75% of AT&T's efforts, Bell Labs' efforts, were turned to electronic devices for wartime, for spying, for communicating, for doing radar, bouncing all kinds of waves off of clouds and things and into oceans to see what would happen. Federal government invested hundreds of millions of dollars. Private organizations like AT&T's research arm, ding-a-ling-a-ling, just like DARPA, and Bell Labs helped develop tools as wide-ranging as, quote, tank radio sets to communicate for systems, to pilots wearing oxygen masks, to enciphering machines, to scrambling secret messages. And Bell Labs' most famous invention during the war years was radar technology, which is often credited with helping allies win the war. Research related to radar began at the Naval Research Laboratory in the 1930s, but the Navy soon turned to AT&T scientists to refine the game-changing technology it was to become. And you know what's even more frightening? Remember, Bell Labs also invented like the laser, and now we're working on all these directed energy weapons. And DARPA is probably the one that has taken on that charge. I don't know what university or group that they're working with to do that, but I've seen some stuff down at Arizona. They're doing photonics and stuff down there. And then there came the Cold War. AT&T's close relationship with the government persisted into the 1950s, and according to Gertner's account, Bell Labs director Mervyn Kelly devoted half of his work hours to military and government affairs. He described the post-war AT&T as one of the main pillars of the military-industrial complex. Ding, ding, ding. And government contracts were not only a source of revenue for the firm, but they gave the company strong allies within the government that the company would need as the 20th century reached its midpoint. These relationships helped fend off various efforts to check AT&T's dominance of the telephony industry, like a 1949 antitrust lawsuit brought about by the Justice Department and settled in 1956, wink, with the AT&T telephone monopoly still intact. That was in the 1950s, and that was during the Cold War with Russia. Remember, we were afraid the Russians were using microwaves to do things to us. I don't know, guys. This just gets really, really dirty, it looks like, as we start digging down the hole. So who knows what they were doing? AT&T was able to retain control over the nation's telephone system for another 30 years until advances in long distance allowed upstarts like MCI and Sprint. And I remember that. I jumped ship soon as they got those guys out there, like a pin drop, to challenge AT&T's long distance business and the logic of its government supported monopoly. Now, remember, I told you when I was a kid, and my mother saying, if the phone company ever comes to the door, don't let them in. Because they're all worried because my dad hooked up a second phone jack in the house, which was illegal. And the phone company was like the government. Well, duh, look, they were the government. They were building weapons and surveillance and radar and supporting the war machine. Like, who would have known it? So, events following those September 11th attacks showed that AT&T's eagerness to collaborate with the government, the entity most responsible for its glorious heyday, did remain a very important portion of its DNA. And they gave it up October 2001. And there you go. So, and then I found, so this was some of AT&T's history. But then there's these microwave towers. I was telling you, they use them for television broadcasting and cell phone broadcasting and some of the war effort and for radar and VLF transmissions and all this other weird stuff. There's a story I came across same year in 2015, December 10th. This is out of the Atlantic. The secrets of an abandoned microwave tower in Kansas. The mysterious AT&T relic reveals connections between telecommunications infrastructure and the Cold War. We were somewhere in Kansas when we found the second microwave tower. We found the ruins of one somewhere else in Kansas earlier during the day. Remember Kansas, where they have a lot of the Nike missiles? This is silos. This other one still had its pyramidal horn reflector antenna intact, the abandoned one. Probably is an omen, and especially when the second one has the AT&T long line sign sitting right out in front. Long Lines, AT&T's division for long distance communication networks, built out a massive microwave radio network starting in 1951. Remember, they were already helping in the 40s. With microwaves in the military. And at that time, it was the first large-scale microwave transmission network for telephony and broadcast, and it would be expanded a ton over the next few decades. And remember, in the 1950s, when they started working on the Cold War with the feds. But by the time the internet rose to prominence, the technology was pretty outdated, they say, and couldn't carry the kind of bandwidth fiber optic cable could carry. So AT&T sold off most of its towers in the late 1990s. And that's interesting too, because when I started to read about directed targeted individuals and some of this voice of God stuff. And some of these stories from people, they traced it back to about the 1990s where they started to see a really high prevalence of this. Oh, this is bizarro. And, you know, I was trying to find out who bought all these towers. If AT&T sold them all off, I found a map that was huge that covered the entire United States for these microwave long line towers that AT&T had. So who owns them? According to the FCC records, it looks like this tower in Kansas actually still belongs to AT&T, but I didn't see anyone around, and it didn't look like anyone had been at the tower in a while. Google Earth still showed a white van parked out by the building, so we assume that someone does work here sometimes. But look at the base of these towers through the fence, and you will find out that there was some history between these and the NSA. Someone on the little building below the tower had written Fairview on the beam. And a few months before this trip, the New York Times had published a lengthy overview of the NSA's Fairview program, in which AT&T had generously assisted the NSA with interception and surveillance. Could this random tower, surrounded by farmland at the edge of Kansas, possibly be the namesake of the surveillance program? Well, fear not. There's a lot of places called Fairview. And in this moment, I did stop myself from going full throttle surveillance. The beam probably just indicated a ground truth that we were in Fairview, Kansas. There are a lot of places called Fairview, but the NSA code words are kind of like horoscopes, endlessly amusing, and you never know if they really are connected. So, among this site's many artifacts, they have found that there is a cable connecting to Offutt Air Force Base right from this Fairview tower. And the Air Force Base is in Omaha, very nearby, completely connected to the AT&T network as part of the military telephony system. Make sure you stick to